our scripture lesson for the Easter story today. I'm going to read Mark's account from the 16th chapter of the Gospel according to Mark, verses 1 through 8. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary, the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb?" But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You're looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him, but go, tell his disciples and Peter, he is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you." Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. Here ends the reading. May God grant us wisdom and courage for interpretation. Memories. Life is really a series of memories in some ways that we play over and over again in the video player of our minds and imaginations. Some of these memories are amazing experiences, ones that we treasure. Some of the other memories, they bring us heartache almost every time we think of them, and some of them are so painful they can take our breath away. And frankly, we wonder if we were to dwell on them long enough, if in some way they might even steal part of our lives, or worst case scenario, leave us feeling dead and maybe even dysfunctional. Dr. Mo Castandi, in a 2011 article reported by The Guardian entitled "Memory Contaminates Perception," said this, said, "We take it for granted that we see the way we see the world is as it actually is, but in fact, we do not. Our perceptions can be influenced by many factors. Even under normal circumstances, we know, for example, that how we feel affects what we see, and that even music affects how we perceive facial expressions. So friends, with all of this in mind, I wonder how many of the terrible things in our past that we're actually remembering accurately. What if some of the lethal memories that have become so poisonous to our well-being may have been because we fed our imaginations inaccurate information as we recall them? What if we've been focusing on the wrong detail of a particular story or situation, when in fact it wasn't even really about us? I wonder. My hunch is this kind of thing happens when we come to the Easter story once a year. We think we know it. We come to church every year on this day, and we kind of lean in a little bit with preconceived ideas because this is familiar. This should be everyday ordinary stuff, the Easter story. And so this leaning in greatly affects our perception and memory of the Easter story. Of course, I'm sure preconceived notions affect many areas of our lives, but today is Easter. And so let's focus on that for a few minutes. Because of our perceptions and the way that we handle memories, Easter can be incredibly hard for some people. Those who fancy themselves to be intellectuals get caught up in the logistics of Easter, handcuffing their imaginations with tactical thinking, logical type thinking, empirical type thinking, saying in essence, "I simply cannot believe that someone could be brought back to life once they are dead. That just doesn't happen." Still others of us come to this Easter story with unexamined beliefs about what might have happened, and we just simply think when asked, "Well, of course everything happened. The Bible says so, I believe it, and surely that settles it." Do you know what both of these ways of thinking about the resurrection story have in common? They're both looking at it through the literal, historical, factual, empirical type of lens, which is not actually the best way to look at the resurrection. They're dealing with only this question: what happened some 2,000 years ago? What does resurrection mean way back then. Well, regardless of what you happen to think did happen or didn't happen on that first Easter back then, what I want you to think about for just a moment is, what difference does Easter make right now? Today, in our everyday mundane existence. The question then for this hour is not, what does resurrection mean 2,000 years ago, but what does it mean today? In what ways does a resurrection shape our lives together as this community we call the church right now? After 24 years of Easter sermons, I learned something brand new this week about Mark's Easter story in my studies. For some reason, it had always escaped me until just this year that the word for tomb in the original Greek language in which the New Testament was written, the word for tomb is the same root word we get two common English words, memorial and mnemonic, not demonic, but mnemonic. It has a silent M on the beginning of it, actually. Now, the first of those terms, memorial, doesn't that seem very logical when you think about a tomb? Because, consider it, when a loved one dies, we hold services in their honor, which are formally called memorial services. And at these services, we remember, we reflect, we use our memories to replay events from that special person's life. We celebrate, we memorialize our loved one at a memorial service. What about the second word we get from that Greek word for tomb? Mnemonic, with an M on the front. How many of you have ever heard the phrase, a mnemonic device? Have you heard that? It could be a song. A mnemonic device could be a rhyme. It could be an acronym. It could be an image. It might even be a landmark. For example, when I was a child, my home church used a song to help us memorize the books of the New Testament and what order they were in from the Bible. It was actually quite effective because that's how I recall the order right now after a couple of seminary degrees. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, and the letter to the Romans. Am I singing a solo? Does anybody else know that song? And of course, I could go on all the way to the end, but you get the point. So, as for the Easter story, the tomb, quite literally, was the mnemonic device. It was the marker for everything that death meant. So, for as long as human beings have lived on this earth, graves or tombstones or headstones have served as the ultimate marker, the mnemonic device, if you will, for death. It's just become a given. If you're going to go and visit a graveyard, you're going to go to a place that carries with it the very central and foundational meaning of finality and death. I'm not sure just how you could interpret it otherwise. We've had this long association with finality and death when we talk about gravestones or headstones or tombs, if you will. Death seems very final, but then all of a sudden come along our spiritual ancestors in the time of Jesus. And they share this Easter story with us, and they ask us to consider that maybe death is not quite as final as we thought it was. What if behind the stone, if you will, there's no corpse? What if death, the thing human beings fear the most in this entire world, does not get the final word? The incredible irony of a place that stands for death and hopelessness being so full and rich of different levels of meaning is almost more than we can wrap our minds around. The place where dead things belong becomes a source of joy, a source of hope, a fullness, if you will, of life. And so the rules for the game of life, Christians say, they get changed. Now the empty tomb is a marker, a mnemonic device for us, but just the opposite of what we've spent our whole lives learning. Now it is to etch something else into our memories that is just so hard and difficult and yet so hopeful if we can catch on. As Frederick Buechner said, the worst thing is never the last thing. Easter flips the script on death and hopelessness. That does not mean that terrible things will not happen to us or that they might not have already happened to us. But Easter means we have a choice in how we think about death. We have a choice in how we think about life. We have a choice in what we do with the message of this powerful, life-changing, history-altering story. This is what we must change, how we think about death and how we think about life, if we are to rise above the painful experiences that feel an awful lot like death in our past. Chances are that each one of us who are here today have had some incredibly painful things happen to us at some point in our life's journeys. And yet, here we all are. We're still breathing. We have endured somehow, and we have gotten to this point in our lives. Perhaps some of you have endured the death of a loved one who was very close to you. Perhaps others of us have suffered incredible abuse at the hands of someone who was supposed to love us unconditionally and protect us, but instead they inflicted great harm on us. It's also very likely that some of us have endured incredible rejection, and yet again, here we are, still breathing. Even though part of us feels like it died way back when and hasn't been the same ever since. You know, as much as I love the church, this church, but also the church with a capital C, sometimes the church is also a source of great pain for people. It should not seem that that could be a possibility, that something like the church, which can be so incredibly life-giving, should inflict harm on people as well. But you see, when dogma and when rules, by the way, churches have written and unwritten rules, have you figured that out yet? And when the dogma and those rules supplant love and justice, people's lives get damaged, and then the church becomes a marker, a mnemonic device, and every time someone sees or thinks about the church, it's like the stone outside the tomb which marks the place of death. And people remember when the church has done them harm, that they were not welcome, that they were not good enough, that they were not rich enough, that they didn't have the proper skin color or sexual orientation or gender identity. You see, even the best things in life can turn when not handled properly. And eventually, if things run a different course, they can serve as markers in our memories where the pain and the pangs of death linger, making everyday life a challenge because of the heaviness that we carry, really, that is etched into our memories. If we're to be completely honest, it's not just the painful memories that cause us so much difficulty themselves in life. It's also what we tell ourselves when we remember those tragic events, those painful stories. Psychologists call it self-talk. We go beyond what happened, and we begin to guess at why it happened. And when we start guessing at why something tragic happened, when we do this, we have potentially made a very dangerous choice, because the truth is, it's hard enough to figure out what happened when something has hurt us. And the why, now the why requires more from us than what most human beings are actually capable of knowing. And these memories become lethal memories when we feed our imaginations too much guesswork about motives. The truth is, we barely understand why we do half the things we do, let alone why someone else did or did not do something that harmed us or hurt us. We just know it hurt. So this year, this Easter, my prayer for each one of us is that we would stop driving ourselves up the wall wondering why so many of the painful things in our past happen. Based on what science teaches us about our memories and perceptions, we are likely feeding our imaginations motives that never existed as we recall things from our past. Instead, what if we allowed Easter this year to be that turning point, that mnemonic device that tells not just our minds, but also our hearts, that the worst thing, as Buechner said, is not the last thing, that in fact, even though we may have come through many obstacles, we are still alive, and we are all here right now, well enough to be present at this Easter worship service. And you know something, not just from our past successes, but also from our past failures, there springs forth a new opportunity today. To my doubting and skeptical friends who may be here today, perhaps you should consider attempting to understand Easter with your heart and give your head a break. And to my friends who have never examined your belief a whole lot about what resurrection means today, and you've just accepted some preacher or someone else's word for it without asking many of your own questions, perhaps a few questions would be in order. You see, it's what we tell ourselves about past, present, and future that shapes who we are and also who we are becoming. The thing is, we have a say in the matter. We have a choice. I hope that we will choose an open spirit to new life on this Easter and to new possibilities. Here's a question for you. What if Easter isn't about molecules and what happened or didn't happen? But what if Easter is about memories and what we do with those memories, good and bad, and how we make new ones and celebrate life? You may have noticed today, if you've been here before, I'm not wearing my usual preacher uniform of a black robe. This is a lot of white for me. I put on this white robe just a couple times a year, Easter and Christmas, usually the two highest, holiest days of the Christian year. And over time, even though it didn't start out this way, this old white robe has become pretty special to me. As I said, it didn't start out this way. See, I served at a large church in Tulsa for years as one of several associate ministers. And as a large, pale-skinned man, I generally avoid wearing white robes for fear of looking something like the Michelin Man. If you don't remember the commercials, just imagine a large, puffy, lumpy man made out of white tires. Our senior pastor at the church in Tulsa insisted that all five of us clergy purchase white robes and that every Sunday on the first Sunday of the month, we would wear them together because that's when the church practiced communion during its worship services. So you know something, if you were to look closely at this robe, you'll notice that it actually has a fair number of stains on it. Most of them are purple from grape juice. Many people would toss this robe out and buy a new one. I'm so cheap, I wouldn't dare do it for that reason, though. But you know something? If this robe were just about appearances to me, it would have long been gone. But you see, the thing about this robe is, I have some memories that I'm not willing to part with that have happened in this old white robe that's got some grape juice and I don't know what else. I don't want to think about it too much. What else could be on there? But you see, this robe is so much more. It's about the memories. I've worn this robe, you see, and served children their first communion. I've worn this robe and baptized people, young and old, into the Christian faith. I've worn this old white robe and knelt next to people who are sobbing after the fresh loss of a loved one. I've worn this robe on the dedication Sunday of two brand new church buildings that serve as markers, mnemonic devices of the grace of God. I've worn this old white robe on Christmases and Easters where I'm always reminded that God is not distant, that God is not detached, but that God is invested and manifested in the lives of human beings, however imperfectly. You see, this robe will have to be in shreds. You'll have to pry it from my cold, dead hands before I throw it away. Not because I'm invested in the threads and in the fabric, but because my life is intertwined with the sacred memories I carry with me every time I put this thing on. I could tell myself that it's stained. I could tell myself and remind myself of how imperfect it is. The robe could easily be a mnemonic device for highlighting its own imperfections, but that would be the shallowest, most meaningless interpretation of these tremendous stains that I wear. I choose life when I look at these stains. I choose to beloved this robe. The question is, will you choose to beloved your life and the life God has given you rather than toss it aside when it gets a little stained, when you feel a little worn out, when you are sure you're coming apart at the seams? I choose to beloved this robe. Will you choose to beloved the life that God has given to you? If the resurrection is merely a mental exercise for you, perhaps you're only looking at the stains on the robe at the shallowest level. What if we learn to view the lethal memories And even our mistakes of the past, not as imperfections, but as evidence that God has made us stronger than whatever it is that has tried to harm us in the past. What if the greatest witness to the resurrection of the Christ is not found in the history books, but in your life and my life and in our own experiences? May the God of the dead and the living, by way of the mystery of what we call resurrection power, transform our memories, even the stories we tell about ourselves, until the stains, the pains, the death, the destruction are remembered as evidence that here we are, we're still alive. For we are an Easter people, a people who choose love instead of hate, a people who choose to cling to stories of hope and not despair, and to people who choose life instead of death. So be it. Amen.